This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Donald Trump's second impeachment trial begins tomorrow in the U.S. Senate. Now, the Massachusetts congressional delegation have been pushing change in Washington for several weeks now. You've got Representative Ayanna Pressley calling out white supremacy, Ways and Means Chair Richard Neal pushing to expand the child tax credit, Rules Committee Chair Jim McGovern advancing a resolution to strip Marjorie Taylor Greene of her committees. This week, Senators Markey and Warren are on deck, and WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks is following them. Anthony, thanks for joining us.
Hey, nice to be here, Tiziana.
Anthony, it's kind of hard to get your head around the fact that this is going to be our second Senate impeachment trial in just over a year. Is it going to be similar structurally to last time?
Well, in the basic sort of the way it's set up, it's going to be similar in the sense that the House managers will bring the case before the senators, who will sit and listen and act as the jury. But it's a very different kind of trial. The first trial was based on evidence that was uncovered over many months by the House about, you know, that private phone call between Trump and the president of Ukraine. And there were lots of closed-door meetings, and it was a real investigation that went in, and then a sort of debate about interpretation of events and what they all meant. In contrast, the second trial is going to be based almost entirely on the visceral experience of what these House managers lived and the senators as well. It's going to be just one count against the president, that he essentially excited that mob to attack the Capitol. So in that sense, it's very different. It's probably going to be a lot shorter as well. The first impeachment trial lasted 3 weeks. Democrats are aware that Biden has an agenda to pass. He's got a cabinet to fill. And they don't want this to stretch on and on and on. So the thinking is it's going to be more like 1 week long.
So let's dive into it a little bit. I understand you were on the phone with Senator Ed Markey just before the show. Did he talk to you about President Trump's lawyers' arguments that the whole thing is unconstitutional because he's not president right now?
That's right. I mean, that's going to be one of the main arguments that Trump's lawyers will make, that he did not, they're going to say that he didn't incite his supporters to violence and that he did nothing wrong, but they're also going to say that it's unconstitutional and unnecessary to impeach him because impeachment is for people who are in office and Trump is now a private citizen and out of office. You know, I did talk to Markey about that, and he made the point that Democrats make, that it's absolutely appropriate to use impeachment against a president, even if he's out of office, for crimes and high crimes and misdemeanors that he committed while in office. Otherwise, there would be this idea of a January exception, right? Any president who's about to leave office could do whatever he or she wanted to do without fear of any kind of punishment. So here's a little bit of what Markey said to me about that.
It defies logic to suggest that the Senate is prohibited from trying and convicting former office holders. Otherwise, those office holders can act with impunity.
Right. So that's the idea. And it should be pointed out as well, Tiziana, that although there has been some debate about the constitutionality of this idea of impeaching people who are out of office, a lot of people over many years have sided with the Democrats on this. That this is absolutely a constitutional procedure. But we're going to hear both sides of that argument in the days ahead.
You talked about this sort of visceral case that the Democrats are going to make. Can you give us the outline of it in this single article?
Well, I mean, the idea begins with, I mean, there are a lot of details that we can talk about, but you know, shortly before the Capitol was breached, Trump addressed that rally of his supporters in the Ellipse, not far from the White House, and basically told them to fight like hell. And they marched down, and in short order, the Capitol was breached. And a number of things happened, as we know. And Markey talked about this as well. I mean, Trump, after the Capitol was breached, tweeted that, you know, Mike Pence had let him down. And soon these folks were inside the Capitol chanting, among other things, "Hang Mike Pence." So here's a little bit more of what Senator Markey did when he kind of laid out part of this case in a fairly methodical and lawyerly way. Here's what he said.
when he sent the tweet about Pence at 2:24 in the afternoon, he knew that the mob had already breached and that the tweet would incite the mob further to violence and insurrection to stop a constitutional process. And the tweet incited the mob to further violence.
And Tizian, I think, you know, this is one of the ways that this second impeachment trial against Trump is going to be very, very different from the first, because it's really going to involve the sort of visceral reaction of folks like Ed Markey, frankly, who were actually locked down during the uprising. And so they're going to have some pretty strong feelings about what happened that day.
You talked about a shorter trial. You know, Biden's got an agenda hanging out there. So, you know, time used here isn't passing new stimulus checks or trying to raise the federal minimum wage. There has been this argument that this is a waste of time because there's a foregone conclusion. Right now, it doesn't look like 17 Republicans, the necessary number, will join Democrats on this. What about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good argument. But I think Democrats and Ed Markey is among them really believe that, you know, you just can't let the kind of, you know, really irresponsible behavior, as they see it, go pass with impunity. I mean, some people are saying, yeah, turn the page and move on. But that's pretty difficult to do if you were in the Capitol and you know, were essentially a potential victim of this uprising. So here's Ed Markey also talking about being able to both commit to Biden's agenda, getting those cabinet posts filled, and essentially responding to what they see as a constitutional requirement to hold this trial.
We have to continue to move forward on a COVID relief bill, on an infrastructure bill, and at the same time have the trial of Donald Trump for what I believe was a constitutional violation.
And Tizian, it's worth noting as well that Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts says the riot at the Capitol took place because America hasn't dealt with the problem of white supremacy head on. And she basically made the case against folks who say it's time to turn the page, is that you can't turn the page on something like this unless you deal with it head on. So here she is on CNN yesterday.
As a country, we have been turning the page. If we really believe that this is a moment of reckoning in every way, then we must act accordingly.
So Congressman Pressley there talking yesterday on CNN.
All right. So you've been doing a lot of reporting on the future of the Massachusetts Republican Party sort of in parallel here, especially now that President Trump's out of office. What are you hearing about where state GOP leaders stand on this impeachment trial?
Well, you're talking about specifically here in Massachusetts. I mean, you know, I think the Republican Party everywhere is sort of dealing with the same debate within its ranks. I mean, Donald Trump, if you believe the polls, remains enormously popular among rank and file Republicans. And that's probably the case here in Massachusetts, although I haven't seen any specific polling on that question. But the state party is run by Jim Lyons, who was a very strong Trump supporter. At the same time, you've got folks like Charlie Baker, who really have done a lot to distance themselves from Donald Trump. So I really think that represents the kind of conflict that is playing out across this country, whether to embrace the president or to insist on consequences and essentially move the party more toward the reasonable center. And you see that playing out all across the country in the states. You see it at the national level as well with the national party.
So if Senate Republicans do embrace the president and he is acquitted, then the door is open for him to run again in 2024. What does that mean for other hopefuls for the presidency and for the party writ large?
Well, what it means is that the Republican Party would remain Donald Trump's party. And I think it would be very difficult for people to run against him. That, I think, is also what is so central to this debate about impeachment. And that is, I think Democrats really want to do whatever they can to ensure that Donald Trump doesn't run for office, can't run for office and return to the White House. And in a funny way, I think people like Mitch McConnell, even though he was very slow to get there, would feel a lot more comfortable if, you know, Donald Trump was no longer a factor in 2024. But Republicans are having a hard time navigating that particular one, and we're going to have to see how that plays out. And step one is going to be the way they respond to this impeachment trial.
All right. That is WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Thanks.
Sure. My pleasure.
All right. Which did you do first last night? Did you catch the Super Bowl first or whatever else you like to watch or read? Or did you shovel first again? That pattern feels kind of familiar. Lots of snow last week. The sun is out shining now. But yesterday, Quincy, for example, saw upwards of 11 inches. And we've got two more storms on the way this week. So how bad is this going to get? Joining us now is WBUR meteorologist Dave Epstein. Hi there, Dave.
Hello. Hello, hello. It's yes, it's turning into a wintry week.
It kind of is, which is, I don't know. I'm not a big snow person. Let me start by asking you, how much snow did we get last night?
Well, most places didn't get the 11 or 12 inches. For the most part, most folks were between about 3 and 7 inches across the area. There was a little band that set up running from central Connecticut on through the southwest suburbs of Boston and then kind of offshore. And that's why we did have some places getting upwards of a foot in a very small spot right around Sharon, Norwood in that area, and then running off towards West Quincy. But in downtown Boston and most places, again, anywhere from 3 to 7 inches.
All right. So, you know, this is something I noticed last week. Inch in Boston, 14 in Milton, 24 in Lowell. You're talking about variability in what you just said from yesterday. Is this kind of variability typical, usual?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that I often tell people is that when you see these snow bands and, you know, we put them on the maps and tomorrow I've got a 2 to 4 inch band over most of the area, that you can get someone that gets only an inch and you can get someone that gets 5 or 6. I mean, that's just the nature of weather. Weather does what weather's going to do. The reason for the bands in our last storm was we had a coastal front. It kept that mild air right along the coastline, colder inland. We had a huge range, a little bit unusual to have such a wide range in such a short distance. And this storm was basically more typical with, you know, a little band setting up in the middle part of the western part of Boston and everyone else kind of in the same range.
Okay, I got to tell you, weather gonna weather is definitely going to be my phrase of the week this week. So listen, I got to ask you, 2021 is already getting a bad rap for repeating the sins of 2020. This is the first big snowy kind of February in a while. Are we looking at a potential repeat of 2015?
100% no. You will not see a repeat of 2015 in your lifetime. So that was a very unusual, you know, series of events. We had 65 inches of snow in 2015. We're not going to have anything even close to that. So that's one of those once in a lifetime, once in a 100-year kind of events to get that in a month. It was also a lot colder in 2015 in January, and we had already had way more snow by this point. So, no, it's not that kind of a repeat. I know some of us have a little bit of, you know, post-traumatic syndrome from that storm and all the snow that we had, but no, it is not going to repeat.
Okay, so I'm relieved. What do we know about what's coming tomorrow and what's coming Friday?
Yeah, so tomorrow is a little storm system which is going to move basically underneath us, bring a burst of snow here. Mostly before about 5 or 6 o'clock, it'll come in probably around or just after the morning commute, 2 to 4 inches. I do think that the evening commute will be a little bit slippery with the snow in the air. Then it will end, and then we'll get a little bit of a break here on Wednesday. It's cold. Temperatures only in the 20s to near 30. It's probably our coldest 7-day period of the entire winter. We're in the middle of that right now. And then Thursday and Friday, not so sure whether or not we're going to see a snowstorm or not. It may stay south of us, so we don't want to lock that in just yet. There's a chance that that brings us some more precipitation, but there's also an equal chance that it just stays out to sea and we don't see anything. So we shouldn't panic yet that there's going to be another storm Thursday night and Friday. Definitely something to watch, is a possibility. But as I said, it's also a possibility we miss it altogether.
And then after that, do you think there might be a break in this pattern?
Well, actually, it does stay a little bit, unsettled Sunday and into Monday. There might be another storm we have to watch, and then sometime next week there's another one. But these storms are basically riding the jet stream, the divide between the cold air and the mild air to the south. And if that divide stays a little further south and we're basically in just cold, dry air, we won't get any of these snowstorms. They'll kind of ride off through New York and down through the D.C. area. And that's definitely a possibility. So it's an active pattern across the east. Whether or not it turns into an active pattern, every single one of those storms for greater Boston still remains questioned. No doubt we're going to get snow tomorrow, but after that, I think there's a bit of a question on just how many of those storms affect us directly.
Well, nothing like a good knuckle biter. Thanks for that, WBUR meteorologist Dave Epstein. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, you may or may not be a football fan, though if you are, heads up, we are going to take your calls a little later in the show on last night's Super Bowl game, Tom Brady's seventh ring. Still, even people who aren't football fans often tune into the Super Bowl for the commercials. You probably have done that yourself. And while COVID-19 has changed a lot about life, including how much people are watching network TV, it turns out that the price tag for a 30-second Super Bowl spot, it just keeps climbing. It's about $5.5 million now. So the question is, did advertisers spend their money well this year? WBUR senior news analyst John Carroll is joining us to review the good, the bad, and the ugly of last night's ads. He spent 2 decades as a creative director and consultant in the ad industry. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
So, John, always fun to start with the headline. Big takeaways. What did you see? Was there some kind of theme across the ads last night?
There were a couple of themes. One of them was nostalgia. You saw Wayne's World, you saw Sesame Street, you saw Dolly Parton flipping her 9-to-5 anthem from 1978. There was also a lot more inclusivity, diversity last night than we might have seen previously. We had a lot of actors like Michael B. Jordan, Don Cheadle, David Diggs, who showed up in the ads. And I think there were a couple of ads that really stood out for diversity. One was the Indeed job search website, which featured real people, real job seekers, mm-hmm. and really busted up a whole bunch of stereotypes that I thought was really a welcome change. So those two things were really the major trends that I saw in the ads. And you had your usual celebrity stuffed ads, ads going for humor. Some of them made it, some of them didn't. Super Bowl ads tend to overpromise and underdeliver. And I think that we had our fair share of those last night.
Okay, so to that point, it didn't feel to me like there were any of those iconic moments like a 1984 Apple commercial or the Clydesdales after 9/11. Anything that you think is going to sort of stick with us for years?
Well, I know that Jeep was going for that iconic status with Bruce Springsteen, but I have to say, that was $11 million that they just should have set on fire, because it in the climate that we have right now, the political climate we have right now, you're either preaching to the choir or, you're getting yelled at by the opposite side. So I think it swung and missed for a lot of people, because there's just no room for that right now in the public discourse.
Yeah. Let's talk about some specific ads and play some sound for folks. I want to start with something that didn't happen technically, because Budweiser, to have a little fun with it, made hay out of not airing a blockbuster Budweiser ad, often like the Clydesdales or something like that, because instead they were donating money to the vaccine awareness. But then during the second ad break, here comes Bud Light with a minute-long greatest hits ad. Here's a little bit of that.
Where's the Bud Light?
It's missing.
What a mess.
Medieval people. Post Malone?
Cedric. Dr. Galagos?
Yes, I am.
All right, Bud Light legends.
Let's do this.
Oh, the Bud Light's back.
Nice.
The Bud Light legends save the day.
Now, arguably an entertaining commercial, but was that a bait and switch by Anheuser-Busch or just a smart tactic?
Well, I think, Anheuser-Busch has a lot of different brands, and they had 3 or 4 of them in the Super Bowl last night. I think they went with the flagship brand sitting out because it was basically a PR kind of effort, and tried to ally them with the pro-vaccine side of America. The other ones, they're all legitimate advertisers. I think if people didn't make the distinction between Anheuser-Busch and the brands that make up Anheuser-Busch, then, maybe they were misled to some degree. I mean, the company itself ran an ad that had people going out for a beer, saying, wouldn't it be nice if you could just say to somebody, let's go have a beer. Eventually, you're hoping that, that would happen.
All right, so the Budweiser Clydesdale sit out, and Sam Adams takes advantage of it. It was kind of a stinker shot from them. So we open with this powerful, majestic view of horses on the streets of Boston, and then all hell breaks loose. The horses run wild after your cousin from Boston accidentally sets them free. Here's a little bit of that.
Whoops, your cousin from Boston.
I did not see that coming. Anyway, Sam Adams Wicked Hazy IPA.
Juicy, right?
Can we not tell my mom about this?
Can they even do that?
They did it. The ad only ran in Boston and New York. And, there was some speculation that Anheuser-Busch might come after them. I'm not sure you can trademark a Clydesdale. Maybe you can. But I think it was wise of Anheuser-Busch not to go after Sam Adams. They would have looked like a bully and a bad sport. The ad didn't work all that well as far as I was concerned. But it got some pre-press, and that's a lot of the game with Super Bowl ads, is to try to get as much pre-press and post-press as you possibly can to supplement your ad on the air.
All right. So I said at the top, about $5.5 million for an ad. That's a lot to throw into the wind if your ad flops. Reddit did something kind of interesting. They ran a 5-second ad. I think based on a 30-second spend, that's about $920,000. Can you talk about that ad, and was it a good idea?
Talk about your post ad bump. Reddit got a good one. I mean, basically, it was a 5-second ad. You would have to go and rewind if you were taping and freeze it to be able to read it. But basically, it was a self-congratulatory ad talking about how well its people do. It had echoes of Wall Street Bets, the sort of investment site that runs on Reddit, that
GameStop
was involved
thing.
In the GameStop fiasco. So I think, from that standpoint, it was a smart buy. Sometimes, it costs more for a 15-second ad, more than half, than for a 30-second ad. There can be a premium there sometimes. But that was their entire ad budget. So, they spent it all on 5 seconds on the Super Bowl.
So you mentioned there weren't a ton of ads that spoke to our moment, but I do want to get to some of those heartstring ads, and there were some. They're really designed to just make you feel something. You've got the Ford ad offering hope after the pandemic ends, another 2-minute ad narrated by Bruce Springsteen for Jeep about coming together. You talked about that one. Then there was this Toyota ad, and it was powerful. It told the story of Olympian Jessica Long with images of her swimming. Here's some of that.
Mrs. Long?
Yes?
We've found a baby girl for your adoption, but there are some things you need to know. She's in Siberia, and she was born with a rare condition. Her legs will need to be amputated. Her life, it won't
so
be
So really,
easy.
That one really was gut-wrenching. It's quite a long ad, and it really shows this family's commitment to this girl who grows up to be this powerful Olympian. What's interesting is that in all of those kinds of ads, only Jeep even bothered to show a vehicle. So what are they really selling?
I mean, they're selling brand image. They're selling some kind of emotional connection with the viewers and consumers. Toyota is really good at doing those kinds of ads. They've been doing them for, I think, the last 2 or 3 Super Bowls. And I think, what they want to do is show themselves as a company with a heart, show themselves as a company that knows what's important in life and what isn't. And, you know, they're not selling a car. They're selling a brand, a company. And, you know, it was probably the best ad of the night in terms of just having an impact on the viewers and having a lasting impact on the viewers.
So the other ad that was an ad that sort of didn't run because it was T-Mobile and Verizon was the sponsor, had Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski with the headline 1 year ago. Here's some of that.
Gronk.
What up, TB?
What do you think my next move should be? Give it to me straight. Maybe it's just time I hang him up.
If you retire now, you're going to be walking on soft sand in a week.
Just come to Florida
and feel the wind in your hair. Retirement is like winning another one. Maybe I'll even join you.
On the Spotty Network, this is what Tom heard.
If you retire now, you're soft and weak.
Just come to Florida and win another one.
Maybe I'll even join you.
Just go win another one.
Like it's that easy, Gronk.
So, you know, then you've got the Mountain Dew one where there was a Twitter component to it, you know, that we're moving out of the realm of the ad live on the Super Bowl. Reactions to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Mountain Dew one was weird. And, you know, there was a contest. You were supposed to count the number of bottles in the ad and win $1 million. I mean, it would have helped if they had said that up front, as opposed to at the end of the ad. But there's no way. I mean, you know, you have to freeze frame every frame to figure that out. You know, it was odd. It was odd. This Gronkowski and Brady ad, T-Mobile ran a whole bunch of ads. I'm not sure why this one didn't make it. And it wasn't clear whether CBS pulled it or the NFL pulled it or Verizon objected to it. It's kind of a mystery. But it's not like T-Mobile didn't have a whole bunch of other ads that ran during the game.
All right. So last question for you. I know this differs from person to person, but what's your favorite? You said that the Toyota was most effective. What was your favorite?
I think probably the M&M's ad. I really like that one. I thought it was, you know, to give a bag of M&M's to apologize to people for say, you know, calling someone a Karen, even if her name is Karen, which is how it turned out.
Yeah.
So I like that one. Let me just put in the worst ad, I thought, was the Oatly ad with the CEO singing at the piano. I mean, talk about a concept with a capital K. That was just remarkably bad.
All right. Well, that is WBUR senior news analyst John Carroll. John, thanks.
Thank you.
One more snap. Would you have guessed when this impossible season was trying to launch that you'd get it all in, you'd get to Tampa, and when the Super Bowl ended, the ball would be in the hands of Tom Brady?
I don't know why we ever think it won't.
Did you think it wouldn't? Did you think it would? Did you watch, or was it too painful to watch and you had to learn about it afterward? Or maybe you aren't a football person, but you just watched to see what would happen with Tom Brady. Call with your Super Bowl thoughts. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here to help us check this score is Radio Boston's own Chris Siderick. Hey there, Chris.
I can't believe it, TD. I doubted the GOAT. I doubted him.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Sucker. You should not have. Also, here with us, ESPN senior writer and sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday, Howard Bryant. Did you doubt him, Howard?
I thought Kansas City was the better team, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And I think we're going to probably try to get a little bit stronger sound from Howard there. So let me start with Chris Siderick here. Chris, give us some numbers. How big a deal was last night's win for Tom Brady?
I mean, I wish you could see the smile on my face because this is just unbelievable, the level we're talking about here. So that's 7 Super Bowl titles for Tom Brady, which is more than any single franchise in the entire league over the history of the league. He's got 21 Super Bowl touchdowns now. That's more than the second-place quarterback Joe Montana and third-place Terry Bradshaw combined. He's got 5 Super Bowl MVPs. Nobody else has more than 3. And if you think about his contemporaries, Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, add them all up, they've played in 9 Super Bowls. So he single-handedly has played in more than all those guys combined. Not to mention the fact that he goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the losingest franchise in all of sports in terms of winning percentage. And even with Brady leading them to 3 wins to get to the Super Bowl going into last night, Brady had more Super Bowl appearances than Tampa Bay had playoff wins over the course of their franchise's history. One more for you, TD. Brady has played in 18% of all Super Bowls ever and 48% of the Super Bowls since he was drafted.
Yeah, which is incredible. 55 Super Bowls, right? And one quarterback has played in 18% of them. So, Howard, I think we've got you back. Chris has made a pretty strong case there. Is he the GOAT across a lot of the major men's sports? I don't want to get into the Serena Williams fight in women's sports because she's got 23 Grand Slams. But across the major men's sports, does he cross sport hold the seat now?
No, he doesn't. And I'm incredibly disappointed, although I do love the initials TD on Super Bowl Sunday. That is a winner for you right there, right? Let's just call this for what it is. He's not the GOAT in Boston. Have we forgotten Bill Russell? 11 championships in 13 years, including 8 in a row?
Now,
have we forgotten Bill Russell? Let's not do this.
Of course, you've got to consider Bill Russell. But I think it's fair to admit that the league was also a different league at that point.
Well, the league was far fewer teams. Yes, the league was a different league. It was far fewer teams. However, the concentration of championship players was even greater than it is now. You had to go look at the number of players. I mean, he never lost a game 7, ever.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Bill Russell, you've got these guys. You've got Bill Russell. Tiger Woods. Well, you've got Michael Jordan. I'd put Serena in that category, Tiziana. Yeah, go ahead.
There's something else in there that you got to consider when it comes to someone like Russell as well. And that is, not only did he do these things, right, as a champion, but also Bill Russell did it as a coach, too.
Yeah.
He was a player coach. He won 2 championships as a coach.
Well, Brady's not done playing yet. We'll see where he goes.
Well, let me stop you both there, because that is also an interesting dimension to this, which is, when does a player's legacy stop being tracked, right? So Russell, part of his greatness is as a coach. So we have heard that Brady's got an appetite to develop other players. I just think this is interesting. When do you stop marking it? Or is there a chance to roll up more for an athlete after they're done with the game?
Well, Tiziana, one thing that I think is incredible too, and Chris brings up the differences in the league. Let's also not forget that Tom Brady is playing in the most quarterback-friendly period in the history of the NFL. He didn't have to go through what Terry Bradshaw went through, where you could just go mug the quarterback and mug the receivers. I mean, look at the number of penalties that changed this game yesterday in the first half. The Chiefs were riddled with pass interference penalties and defensive holding penalties and all that you get away with back then when Joe Montana was playing or Roger Staubach. So these comparisons are fun, but if you really do look at things, it's incredibly difficult in a team sport like football, which we can't have it both ways, can we? Can we call football the ultimate team sport and then take one player who doesn't even play defense be the greatest of all time? I mean, the defense is really what won that game yesterday. If you're looking at what took place, I mean, the Chiefs didn't score a touchdown.
So that is a fair point.
Yeah, let's have Chris jump
into that. But I want to respond to a couple of things, because I think the sustained greatness that happened here in New England, you say it is the most quarterback-friendly time for this league. That is hands down, without question, true. But it's also the most difficult time to maintain extended greatness. The salary cap, these rules are built to create parity within the league. But I want to say, Bruce Arians has talked about Tom Brady coming to Tampa Bay and changing the culture of the organization and actually coaching on the field and really kind of just totally changing everyone's approach to what they do. And I think that's something that developed during his time here under Bill Belichick, and something that you can't undersell the importance of, because I do think that
could not agree more.
Yeah, that franchise was a losing franchise, and he manages to go in and change the culture, which is not easy to do.
No,
all right, I want to grab a couple of calls here. Yeah, Howard, throw your thought in, and then I want to grab. We've got callers who want to join us.
I was going to say, I am not trashing Tom Brady at all, and I'm on the con side of this conversation only because you put me there. Let's go on the pro side of it, which is, this man is unbelievable. You play half your career playing for championships. I mean, this is what he has done. Is maybe the most remarkable, and I don't like superlatives, but one of the most remarkable feats of any professional athlete, of any professional sport, in terms of that sustained excellence. I don't agree that parity is part of the salary cap because the history doesn't prove that. What about the Lions? But what he has done is, you know, enjoy it. And I did not feel like I was watching an X. I watched the Patriots. My friend Jeff was on the phone yesterday. And every time Gronk to Brady or Antonio Brown hit, I texted him, Pats.
There you go. All right, let me grab a couple of calls here. 800-423-8255. We've got Lori on the line in Wayland. Lori, your reaction.
I mean, I just had to call in because I don't know. I can't relate to the haters. How could anybody not want to root for Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? It was so much fun to watch him and Gronk, and he is a really hard worker, and he's given a lot to New England that we can feel good about the last, lifetime for most of the kids I know. And, you know, it's just been great. So I'm happy for him.
Excellent, Lori. And let's grab one more. We've got Dario on the line from Back Bay. Dario, give us your thoughts.
Yes, hi. I was also listening to your show before the Super Bowl, and you brought in some people that were against Brady, and they were haters and this and that. I just wanted to tell your guests also, what do they think about this theory that some of us have, that for the past two seasons with the Pats, they weren't really getting any receivers for him. They were not giving any support, any linebackers. He was all by himself. Kind of like they were trying to push him out of the team, you know, Belichick or the owners. They were just really not giving support to kind of get rid of him. And I'm very happy that he went to a different team and showed them that he could have still done it if they would have given him enough support.
I think this is
all
a
right,
great
Dario,
call there.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah,
yep.
I love that comparison because I heard somebody talking about if you're rooting for Brady but didn't root for Johnny Damon when he went to the Yankees, you're a hypocrite. And I think it is so important to pay attention to the circumstances. And Dario's right. This team, this was kind of a natural split, right? They basically had this incredible two-decade run of success. And folks started to kind of wear on each other. There seems to be some serious friction between Belichick and Brady. Belichick clearly wanted Jimmy Garoppolo to be the next guy. Ownership didn't see it that way. Brady was going to leave. It wasn't as if we could have kept him here with the right contract offer. He wanted to go somewhere else and show that he can win on his own. And I think he was going to do that. And I don't. I'm with Dario. I think it's fun to root for him. We were lucky to have him here 20 years and to experience that run of success. Probably the greatest dynasty in all sports, if you really think about what this team did over the length of time that they did it. And I think seeing him do it elsewhere doesn't take away any of that joy that we had having him here in Boston.
All right, Howard, yeah, Build.
Only enhances that. I mean, I don't know what the generations are on these calls right now, but I'm 52 years old, and I can tell you that this franchise was nothing. We all remember, if you're of a certain age, that the what it meant to be a Patriots fan, and that over the last 20 years, it's night and day. There's no possible way that I can envision anybody in New England looking at the end of the day at what happened yesterday and feeling anything but joy. Look at what these athletes gave us. Look at what they give you as fans. Look at why we watch, and especially if you remember, you know, back when the highlight was maybe trying to have a lead against the Dolphins in Miami. Let's not forget how bad this franchise was, you know, and that there's nothing that I saw yesterday that made me think anything other than, wow, this, you're watching something amazing. Enjoy what you're watching. It can happen every day.
Yeah. So Chris Howard, for our listeners who are not necessarily everyday football people, there's a lot they might not know about play-by-play in the game, et cetera. But there were some big, interesting lessons here about Brady sort of bringing new people with him and proving that the right ingredients at the right time can cause real transformation. Chris, talk about that. I mean, that's something lots of people recognize as having happening in their organizations or not happening in their organizations.
Yeah, I think even more than the folks he brought in, I mean, this Tampa Bay team was, for the most part, very similar to the team from a year ago, which was not a successful team. And I really think that speaks to the culture of the organization. You had Bruce Arians say this morning that Brady taught them how to win. And I think that comes from a genuine place, that there is an approach, a professionalism, a grinded-out mentality that he brought to the table. And with his resume, all these younger players, they have to look at that and say, I'm a first or second year guy. I'm looking at this guy working his butt off, you know, sun up to sun down. day after day. He doesn't have to. He could coast at this point, and everyone would still say he's the greatest. So I think that sets the tone, and I think that really was the biggest difference for this Bucks team this year.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say that the bottom line, when you walk into a professional sports team and you walk in a clubhouse or a locker room, is really not that different than any big professional organization. When you say, if you can't do what I can do, why am I listening to you? Why am I listening to you? You have to be able to appeal to me that there's a reason to listen to you. And when Tom Brady walks into your locker room, you got a reason to listen to him. When Tom Brady yells at you, you say, okay, look at what Tom Brady did. Maybe there's something to that. And football and all these sports, especially when it comes to the quarterback position, it's a best player wins sport. And there's a reason why these guys are different than the other guys. And that especially in that position, when you get into that huddle, the question for those other 10 guys is, do we believe in you to get us where we need to go? And with him, the answer is a 100% yes. You buy in, you go play. With other guys, it's kind of like, I don't know if we believe in you. But when Tom Brady's on your team, you believe you can win, and that changes everything.
1-800-423-8255. Call us with your lessons from this season, from this movement of this leader to another team and the changes you saw there. Also, talk about how you watched the game last night and how different that is during a pandemic. There's plenty to chat about. 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Chris, I think you want to riff on something we just heard from Howard.
Yeah, well, it was just coming back to I was talking more about the defense last night and Brady being one player and his team kind of rallying around him and performing. I want to play a little bit of sound because I think there was a moment for Patrick Mahomes where this is early in the fourth quarter and they're down big, but they're driving and closing in on the end zone. And here they have 4th and 9, and I just want you to listen to how this play plays out.
4th and 9. Again, running for his life. Mahomes, batted away, incomplete. White knocks it down. It was intended for Darrell Williams. He was parallel to the ground when he threw it.
That's unbelievable. And get it there, and it actually hits him in the face mask, and Mahomes knows that was a chance.
I said I had a stat that was going to blow your mind, Tiziana. It's been floating around a bit as the day's gone on here, but Patrick Mahomes scrambled 497 yards before throwing or getting sacked over the course of the game. Almost 500 yards running around behind the line of scrimmage to throw the pass or get tackled. And, I mean, it's just unbelievable the amount he was moving around. But what I wanted to come back to is all the way leading up to this game, folks are talking about Patrick Mahomes is going to be the next GOAT. He's going to take it over. This is Brady passing the torch, and Mahomes is going to be even better. And we tend to do this a lot when athletes win and win big early in their careers. But he's now 6 Super Bowl wins behind Brady just to tie him over the course of his career. And I think it just shows you the sustained level of excellence and doing it year in and year out, how difficult that really is. There's only so much you can do on your own, obviously. That play was an incredible physical play. How he did that, I have no idea. The ball literally doinks Darrell Williams off the face. And so he's just sitting on the ground, Patrick Mahomes, and you could see it in his eyes. He's just like, what more do you want me to do here? I just thought it was really a striking moment. And that stat, man, he really was running for his life all game.
So, Howard, I guess he at least proved that he's a mobile quarterback with those stats.
Very much so. And I think that also speaks to the rest of this game. The defense, the Kansas City defense, thought that they had the advantage on the Chiefs, on the Bucks, but it was the Bucks defense that was phenomenal. I mean, they did something that you just didn't think that you could hold Patrick Mahomes to 9 points, to 3 field goals, especially in a championship game. And I think there was that. And I think there was one other thing, too, that really hit me in watching this. And that was the fact that when you're a great player, at some point you have to feel like you're going to be the difference maker. And everyone kept waiting. Okay, where is that Patrick Mahomes moment? When is it going to come? And then you realize that it wasn't going to happen. That this, when you go back and look at this game, it was a blowout. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
And it was done.
Yeah.
And when it comes to the GOAT conversations and the rest of this stuff, you also have to say to yourself, too, let's just relax. Look at what Tom Brady did. Let's not put this on Patrick Mahomes. Hey, 10 years from now, let's have this conversation. But Patrick Mahomes it's a little early in the game. Aaron Rodgers, people talk about him being the greatest quarterback. People talk about Peyton Manning. They haven't done what Tom Brady has done. It's a different atmosphere. It's a totally different place.
All right, before we go, I'm going to try to grab two more callers here. We've got Michael on the line from Southie. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, I mean, I haven't heard it yet so far, and apologies if I missed it, but I think Tom Brady statistically probably played the best game he's ever played in the Super Bowl last night. I could be wrong, but, I mean, he made so few errors, so many other Super Bowls he's won. He's made a ton of errors, and he's still pulled it out. If you look at the championship game a few weeks before, he threw three interceptions in a row. You know, again, he had a great night, and if he throws three interceptions last night, I don't think he wins. So a lot of it was just he had maybe his best Super Bowl ever, technically, in my opinion.
Well, especially the first half. All right. He was, I think, 16 for 20 in the first half. He was surgical to start that game.
All right, and we're not going to have time to go to this other caller, but I want to do honor to him. Bill was calling from Lynn and wanted to remind us that Michael Phelps has 23 gold medals in his sport. So in this conversation, he's encouraging us to be broader in our vision also of who is the great. We have about a minute and a half left, so I'm going to ask you each one last question. Chris, come at this sideways. One other thing about last night's Super Bowl that's been on your mind, 30 seconds or so.
I mean, it was bittersweet. It was all sweet watching Tom Brady. It was bittersweet for me. Super Bowl is usually a social experience. I had a Zoom call going up in my living room with my dad and my brother, but it really just drove home how isolated we all are right now and how much I hope that we are getting things heading towards a normal direction and can start to see each other for real soon.
And Howard, what's your sideways look?
My sideways look was that it was an amazing moment, and then of course it was completely ruined by getting a phone call that my great friend Pedro Gomez of ESPN died of a heart attack right in the third quarter while we were watching the game. And it was it had already marred sort of how we were looking at this game with the pandemic and everything else. And I am reminded that these contests are supposed to give us joy and escape. And this year and last year, it just doesn't even feel like that's possible. Maybe next
Howard,
year.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no,
I'm
it's
sorry.
A tough one.
That is Howard Bryant, senior writer for ESPN and a sports correspondent for NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday and Radio Boston's Chris Sitterick. Great to have you both.
Thank you.
All right, listeners, quick note before we sign off. Tomorrow, WBUR will carry day one of Donald Trump's second impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate in its entirety, so there will be no Radio Boston tomorrow. And that is our show for today. We are a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Thanks for listening. I'm Tiziana Deering. This has been Radio Boston.